You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Because there's like Vera Wang and stuff flying all over the place now. I'm in an adjustment period that I don't like right now.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I don't use Baseball Reference because, you know, I write for FanGraphs and I'm a company man, so I'm only allowed to by contract to look at FanGraphs' page. Not...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
There's so many late options for speed that I don't think I need to go with somebody who looks like they take a wiffle ball bat with them to the plate as far as power is concerned.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Darius Austin and Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing fine. I was on the run today, but I think I got all my preparation ready, and we have an awesome guest again today, so I want to thank you for that, Justin. You've been doing great on the guests. Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing about kind of the fantasy baseball community and industry as a whole is, you know, there are a lot of guys out there and women that are really willing to kind of give you their time and help you out. And our guest today is one of those guys. We'll get to him in a second, though. Darius, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's very wild and wet here in Wales. We've got a storm coming, so just glad to be inside, really, away from the weather conditions at the moment.
Is that like different than any other day of the year over in England?
It's very variable, I would say. I think we have very nice days. It's not that it rains all the time, but especially here when it rains, it really rains. So yeah, it varies a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, Northern California has been getting pelted this month. We finally have a clear day for the first time in about 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm enjoying the nice break in the rain for once. But joining us today is Nando DeFino of Fantasy Sports. Nando, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great, man. Thank you very much for having me.
We're always happy to have you. Been a little while since you've been on, though. So for those who don't know who you are, please tell them, you know, kind of what you do and where you can be reached on social media.
I'm over the Fantasy Sports Network, a 24/7 television network, and, well, digital and all that stuff, dedicated to fantasy sports. You can find me at Nando DeFino on Twitter, if you so choose.
Well, it's not just television anymore. Tell people about kind of the radio stuff you guys are doing over there, because you guys are doing a lot, and I don't think it gets enough publicity.
Oh, thanks. Well, so after, I guess right after week one of the NFL season, we launched a 24/7 radio network. And it's cool because, you know, we stream live all day, all night. There's a cool app for it. And legitimately cool. Like, you know, it's easy to play with. I hate apps. I like this one. And then everything just turns into a podcast. So if you don't, you know, if you miss your favorite show at 11 a.m., just run back and pick it up on iTunes. It's neat. It's fun. It's got a great group of guys working on it too. So, in fact, right now while we're doing the show in the background, Al Melchior is doing his Fan Rag Sports show.
Yeah, and Al's a great guy. Guy, we're going to get on the podcast here in the near future. You also have friends of our podcast. Joe Pizzapi has been on there. Dan Strafford, the guys over at ITL. So a lot of great guys that our listeners have heard on our show as guests have shows over there. So definitely go check out that app. And it's 100% free, right?
100% free. I mean, whatever, you know, get a good data plan. But yeah, it's free to stream. It doesn't cost anything. And like just a bunch of great dudes. Really smart analysis.
Definitely. So definitely go check that out. And we appreciate you taking out some time for us to talk some shortstops. So we're going to jump right into that and talk about some shortstops. And we're going to lead off with Xander Bogaerts. Bogaerts had a pretty much breakout season last year. Nando, what are your thoughts on him for this year? Is he a top three, top five, or not in that kind of bracket, kind of shortstop?
I've got him right at five, but I think that, you got VR, who's going to steal a billion bases, who I have number one, and you have Story, who I think has a little more power than most of these guys, and maybe a little more speed. And then you just have them all like the same dude, like Correa, Seager, not so many steals, Bogaerts, Russell, Lindor, even Tim Anderson. So to me, it's like six and one, half dozen of another, and I let the lineup break the tie. And for me, the Red Sox have a good lineup. So I've got Bogaerts at five, right ahead of Addison Russell. Decent power, nice speed. You're going to have good average, but if you say you want Lindor ahead of him, I'm fine with that.
All right, Darius, what are your thoughts? Are you on the Bogaerts train?
Yeah, I have him in with that group. I think he was almost identical to Correa in terms of his power and speed last year, but I feel like we've kind of seen a lot of different versions of him, and I'm not quite sure which one we're going to get this year. Maybe this will be the mega breakout and he'll vault right up into a sort of first round type player, or maybe this will just be another version and he'll strike out a little bit more and run a little bit less, and I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. So I still have him around that Seager, Lindor group, but I'm just a little concerned that maybe he gets drafted from people expecting a further breakout, and I'm not sure I want to pay for that. So I certainly like the Red Sox lineup, like Nando, but I think kind of in that group I'm happy to get whoever's last off the board, really.
And I think that's the strategy I'm taking. If I'm going to go for an elite shortstop, I'm just going to take the guy who kind of finishes last out of the tier, because I've been in a number of mocks and a number of drafts where pretty much every single one of the guys falls to last. And I'm not a Lindor guy, so I kind of strike Lindor outside of that elite tier. But any of the other guys, including Bogaerts, I'm just waiting to jump on whoever finishes last. And I agree with you too, Darius. I don't think there's a ton of growth potential with Bogaerts. I do see some growth potential with a couple of the other ones, especially Correa and VR. I think they have the potential to do a little bit more. Maybe not VR, but VR was just so out of this world. I kind of consider that his growth potential. So, that may kind of slide Bogaerts a little bit lower, but for the most part, I love the consistency. I feel like he has probably the highest floor out of the elite shortstop tier. Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, Xander Bogaerts is going 27th overall in ADP on NFBC. I think we have to try and gauge this power surge in the middle infield that we had last year, which isn't really the easiest thing for us to gauge. I asked the question, how much power upside is there really with Xander compared to some of the other shortstops? I tend to think Correa being bigger, is the guy who maybe has the most upside besides Trevor Story, like Nando said. So, last year his walk rate and his K rate were both up, which sort of worked out just fine. His home runs tripled from 7 in 2015 to 21 last year. And his career high at any level is 13 in steals, which he had last year. So, if there's much of a David Ortiz effect, he's actually the guy in the top tier that I really like overall as a player, but I just think his draft value has gotten a little bit too high for me, because I don't necessarily see a breakout in any one category. He's one of those across the board decent guys that I would love to have in round 4 or round 5, but he's never falling that far.
And I think, with the added depth at the position this year, I don't think you have to really focus on taking one of the elite six. I think you can definitely wait if you want, because there's just so much more depth than in years past. In years past, there was like one or two elite guys, and then the rest of the position was garbage. This year, you've got guys all the way down into the top, almost 20 shortstops that are worth starting and viable starters, and then second base is even deeper. So for your middle infield slot, it's really a position you can wait on if you want.
I think part of the problem is with, as I was looking at all the shortstops, they're all young. Like, so many of them are born in, like, 91, 94. You don't know what they're going to develop. Like, they're still developing, but you don't know if this, you know, is Corey Seager going to develop 30 home run power, 35 home run power? Is Bogart's going to steal 40 bases? It's like, I just don't know which little columns are going to go up and which ones are going to stay the same, which makes it tougher to make an argument for one or the other, I found.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point because, and I think the variety of outcomes for all six of the elite guys, or that, you know, that tier, if you want to put them all in one tier, it can be pretty high. We saw some amazing stuff in 2015 for Carlos Correa, and then, you know, took a little bit of a step as the league readjusted to him last year, but he was still great. You know, I don't think anybody's necessarily projecting VR to repeat what he did last season. You know, does Corey Seager maybe add some speed? You know, and then what does Trevor Story do coming off of the injury, because he started off so well? I think there's just such a variety of outcomes. I don't even mind missing out on this tier and taking in another elite player at a different position and getting a guy I know what I'm going to get out of him, you know. If you wait all the way, you know, kind of towards the end of shortstops and take a guy like Brandon Crawford or Marcus Semien, you waited 200, you know, picks, but you know exactly what you're getting out of him. And if you're a guy that really likes to keep track of what his potential output is going to be, that may be a little bit safer play.
Well, you can also throw in Trey Turner to the mix after 10 games in most leagues. So all of a sudden you go from this incredible swell of talent at shortstop to an even bigger one, to considering, you know, the market value right now for Trey Turner is sky high as well.
Yeah, I mean, Trey Turner would be considered probably the top of this tier if he had the shortstop eligibility already. Let's go ahead and move on to Eduardo Nunez. Nando, what are your thoughts on Nunez this year? Is last year repeatable for him?
Yeah, you know, my gut with him says no, but I've kind of always, like, championed the guy who never got a full season of at-bats, had to play, like, and it's not even like he had 200 at-bats and then stopped. It's like those 200 at-bats he's been getting the last couple years have been so choppy and sparse. I don't think you get 40 steals by accident. I think that's repeatable. I don't know about the 16 home runs. If he hits 11, I think that's realistic as a ceiling. The average has kind of always been there. So I got no problem saying, you know, he's going to hit 275, steal 35 bases, and hit 11 home runs. I think that's the best you're going to get out of him, though, which I just think he's going too high. Like we said, a lot of these guys are young. They have a lot of upside. They got a huge ceiling. I think Eduardo Nunez, we've seen the best we're ever going to see out of him in maybe all of those categories.
I agree with you, but I'm going to jump on him in a second because I'm going to throw it to one of our Residence Giants fans, and that's Darius. Darius, what are your thoughts on Nunez?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to Nando, really. I think the home is definitely not going to be repeated, especially in AT&T, where we all know that that's not the best place to hit home runs. I think the lineup spot could be a concern. I think he's slotted for sixth at the moment. I think that could put a cap on his plate appearances and his steal opportunities. And I know that he's kind of been sort of got the short end of the stick in terms of playing time in the past, but that also gives me some concern in that we haven't really seen him play a full season before last year, and I don't know whether he can keep up that level of production over a full year again. So, yeah, I have quite a lot of concerns, and I think Nando's right. I think this is the 2016 was the high we're going to see in all these categories.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Nunez?
Well, even with the choppy at-bats, you know, generally speaking, baseball kind of figures out who a player is by the time they're 27 or 28, especially one that's been around as long as he was, you know. He's got a career 301 BABIP, which I think is really low for a speed guy, and 6.5% is his career high in walk rate. You know, last year he did happen to hit less grounders. You know, he had never had more than five home runs before last year when he hit 16. So that's why people are getting these comments about how it's pretty unlikely that suddenly he's a 16 home run guy at this point in his career. Seems like it would be pretty crazy. So, you know, I agree with most what everyone has said. He's somebody that seems to be getting avoided in a lot of drafts. So his ADP seems to be pretty variable. The only thing that you do get out of him is you do get that third base and shortstop eligibility that you also get out of VR, which in this case, with as deep as the middle infield is, that turns out to be quite a bonus that you could move him over to the corner.
I think, too, you have to expect him that he might actually pick up outfield eligibility in season two, which could be useful. I just can't get behind the price, and I'm the other resident Giants fan on this podcast, so I'm especially down on Nunez because, one, I don't think the power is repeatable. I think we'd be lucky to see double digits this year. I would probably project 7 home runs and 30 stolen bases, which isn't necessarily a bad production level from your shortstop because, you know, it should come with, you know, somewhat decent average, you know, probably 275. But I just think he's being overdrafted due to the stats last season. I don't think there's any way we see 16 home runs. And honestly, I don't even know if there's a chance for 40 stolen bases again. I would definitely kind of temper down my expectations. Giants aren't necessarily a team that runs a ton. And there were times in which they let him kind of run wild last year, and then there were times in which they kind of held him on the base pass. So I don't really know what team kind of motif they're going to go with. But they're not a team with a ton of team speed anyway. So I'm probably out on Nunez at his current price, which is 115th overall in average draft position on NFBC.
Well, for you stat heads, I'd just like to mention that he has 2.6 career WAR, and 2.3 of it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Nando mentioned, he was just a guy that never seemed to get a full slate of at-bats. I mean, he was a big name kind of in prospect circles for a while with the Yankees. I mean, he was a guy, you know, especially with his speed, people thought would be a really interesting fantasy asset, never seemed to be able to catch on at the major league level, even though he did have a couple years with, you know, double-digit stolen bases and 22 at the major league level with the Yankees in 2011. I mean, I think the speed is legit. I just don't know how much the Giants are really planning on running, and I don't buy into the power at all. All right, let's go ahead and move over to a guy who's a little bit more established, or quite a bit more established, and maybe one of those guys that you know what you're going to get from him. Nando, what are your thoughts on Elvis Andrus?
You know, he's another kind of – I'd rather have – and I don't know if this is saying a lot because obviously the ADP plays this out, but I would rather have Nunez than Elvis Andrus. He's just gotten kind of boring to me. I mean, a lot of these guys have these – I don't know, these – you can make a story up where Tim Anderson's going to break out and be awesome and – Marcus Semien's going to get the batting average up, and you know even Troy Tulowitzki's going to play 150 games. And with Elvis Andrus, it's just kind of like, you know, what am I going to expect from this guy? I guess if he hits in the right spot of lineup for the entire year, he'll get a bunch of runs. But he's not going to steal a ton of bases. He's not going to hit for power. You know, the spot in the lineup's kind of questionable with the pieces they have right now. So I'm not crazy. Like, even if he was going at a spot where I should take him in two rounds beyond where he should be, I just feel like he's going to clog up a spot on my team more than help it. So yeah, just you know, he's one of those guys. When I look at the list and when I'm in the draft room, I see him and I just immediately just my eyes go right over him and go to someone else. Just not fun. I don't know. Maybe that's bad analysis, but that's how I like to play.
I get that because I mean he doesn't have a ton of upside. He's not going to be the guy that steals 40 bags again, like he did a number of years ago. I mean, the one thing I like about Andrus is you know you're getting a good floor. So, I mean, you know you're going to get 600, almost 700 plate appearances in season. He's recorded at least 20 stolen bases in every season at the major league level. So, I mean, like, you know you're going to get at least some level production. Some of those guys, you know, you mentioned Troy Tulowitzki, you know, Tim Anderson. You really don't know what their floor is because it's really bad. You know, Troy Tulowitzki could play 35 games and no one would be shocked, you know, if that's what we were talking about in 2018 with him. You know, Tim Anderson has a hard time getting on base when he's not hitting because he doesn't walk. You know, if he gets set down to the minor leagues, I don't think anybody would be surprised. But I think at least, you know, with Andrus, you know that you're you're getting kind of a steady Eddie guy. You know he's going to be in the lineup, you know, every day for you, you're compiling stats. It's not sexy, but I think especially in deeper formats, AL only, 15-team mix, I think I like him a little bit more than those guys because there's some safety to him. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Elvis Andrus?
Well, I capitalized not sexy, so I kind of agree with Nando on this whole thing. You know, he had eight home runs last year. He has been a steady Eddie as far as stolen bases are concerned. I think he's a fallback pick, and I think it's very unlikely that, you know, he's going to move to a very productive portion of, you know, the run production portion of the Rangers lineup. So, you know, the upside and stuff like RBIs and even to a certain extent runs scored is just not what you want within this player pool. You know, again, a couple years ago, we had Alexi Ramirez at shortstop as a top 100 pick. And if we will look back at that season right now, we would scoff at it because he would be well outside the top 20 right now at shortstop. So I think this is a guy that you got in trouble in the draft if you end up with him at your shortstop position, and you're really probably stacked most everywhere else, even if he ends up at your middle infield position.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Andrus for this year?
Yeah, I think not fun and not sexy are definitely the right things to say about him. I guess he's one of these guys who I think there's pretty low chance that he's not going to be maybe kind of a top 15 guy because that floor is so dependable. But the chances of him finding his way into a top five season are almost non-existent. So as you said, if you are in a deeper league and you just need somebody who's safe and he's going to give you reliable production, then it's fine. But I think if you're in a 12 teamer or something, you're probably not going to win your league if you've got the guy who finishes 12th at shortstop playing for you, unless the rest of your team is absolutely stacked. So I think it's kind of format specific, but I certainly see him as being somebody I'm not really interested in at all in shallower leagues. And yeah, maybe just somebody, if I'm just looking for safety, then I'll go for him. But I think everybody's spot on here. He's not someone who's going to set the world on fire.
Yeah, he's definitely not necessarily, I mean, even with the things I said about him, he's not a guy that I'm really targeting or have ended up with a lot because he isn't sexy, and you know there isn't a whole lot of room for growth. So I understand what everybody's saying. Just had to play devil's advocate right there. Let's go ahead and talk about Addison Russell, a guy who does have an immense ceiling. He's a former top prospect that just hasn't quite put it all together necessarily in the way that I think some fantasy owners were expecting. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Addison Russell?
Well, he's got some things that are holding him back. You know, he's got 9 stolen bases in 293 games at the major league level. You know, and the 95 RBI and the 67 runs scored last year just seems like he has the opposite profile of that, that he should be a guy who scores a lot of runs and a guy who doesn't necessarily get a lot of RBIs. You know, the trends are in the right direction as far as his strikeouts being down and his, you know, his walk rate was up. You know, he's going at pick 134. And again, I mean, to look at his kind of a stat line versus what Alexi Ramirez went in the top 100 2 years ago for is astonishing for what this position has come to in so short of a period of time. But I agree with the consensus that I hear across media that says that if you miss out on shortstops early because you get a bashing first baseman and some bashing outfielders and you want to load up with ace pitchers, boy, if this is your fallback plan, you know, that's a pretty good fallback plan, having a kid who's really still coming into his own that's in that kind of an offense. You know, you can do so much worse than Addison Russell at shortstop, and his price is really not gone high enough to me.
Nando, what are your thoughts on Addison Russell this year? Is he a guy you're targeting?
Oh, yeah. I love him. I love everything about him. I think he showed some serious pop in the minor leagues that, look, as a 22-year-old, you hit 21 home runs. If you've got those kind of numbers in the minor leagues, I feel like they're just going to go up. So seeing him hit 20-plus home runs, seeing anyone hit 20-plus home runs in the minor leagues to me in just one season, I sort of feel like 30 isn't totally out of the question. It seems like he's got some speed that he can still show off in the majors. I don't believe that his batting average is going to stay that low. I see more as a 260, even possibly 270. To me, he's just like a stud. And I think you're going to see maybe like a Manny Machado-type path up to, you know, okay, and then really good, and then just like total stud. I don't know if that's this year or next year when he makes that total stud leap. But he definitely has all the tools to do it. I think it's just a question of trying to find the right argument to show that he's going to hit for average. And you got to go back like 2 years in the minor leagues to show it. But if you have that kind of faith, then I can't say you can't like Addison Russell.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Russell?
Yeah, I think the power is legit, and I do think there's potential for more, as you guys have suggested. I have quite a few questions about the average. I don't think it will be as bad as it was last year, but there's potential that he's maybe just a 250 hitter this year, and obviously that is kind of baked into his price a little bit. I also have some concerns about where he's going to bat. I think he's slotted for fifth in a lot of projections at the moment, but the Cubs have the kind of lineup where if Jason Hayward does bounce back and Wilson Contreras continues to hit like he did last year, then he can find himself pretty low in the lineup if he doesn't kind of come out of the gate strong. And we know that Joe Maddon loves to move his lineup around as well, so I think that could impact on his counting stats slightly. But he's also the kind of guy, the opposite of Andrews, that if you hit on him and this is the year he breaks out, then he could win you a league. So providing the price isn't too high, then I think he's got the skills to be a very good player in the future. I'm just not sure whether it's going to come this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's going to come this year, but I'm definitely going to give myself a share or two. He's currently going as the eighth shortstop off the board, 134th overall in NFBC. And I think that's a pretty fair price, given the upside. I mean, you definitely have to kind of bake in a little bit the fact that he's probably not going to hit for, you know, a very good average. You know, hit 242 last season, or in 2015, 238 in 2016. So, I mean, even if he does tick up a little bit, he still kind of gives you a negative in that category. But I think there is more speed. It's just a matter of will he show it and will the Cubs let him run. Joe Maddon is the kind of guy that can turn guys loose, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him break double-digit stolen bases with like 25 home runs. The walk rate went up last year. The strikeouts came down. All good things from a young guy. I think people tend to forget that he's only 23 years old and just turned 23 at the end of January. So this is his age 23 season. So, I mean, this is a guy that still is developing his power, still growing into his body. I think there are brighter days ahead for Addison Russell, which is amazing to say because he's already a top 10 shortstop. I think at some point we could be talking about him towards the elite tier. So I definitely want to get a share or two just in case. Let's move over to my favorite guy in the position. That's Marcus Semien. Nando, what are your thoughts on Semien this year?
Love him. He's the one who's going to be on all my teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think getting that power there, and especially that late, his ADP's out of this world bad.
Criminally low.
Dude, it's like, I don't get it. You can look at his numbers. How are you going to see a guy who had 27 home runs with half his games in Oakland in a terrible hitter's park? And then look at, you know, like fine 238, but I don't think he's a 238 hitter either. I know I've kind of been weirdly optimistic with a lot of these guys and the batting averages, but maybe it's just a symptom of the shortstop position. Marcus Semien, man, he had 273 or 272 in the minor leagues. He's had some seasons of you know, 280, 270 here and there. You're not going to be great. You're not going to expect a 300 season out of him, but I think 250's doable. 255. I don't see how you can pass up on someone with 30 home run potential, almost 30 home run guarantee ish. Definitely 25 home run guarantee, 30 home run potential. And a lineup's going to be better this year, so you're going to add some more runs and runs batted in on there. I don't know, man. I can't say enough good about him, but if you're on board with me, your show, you go ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead, Justin.
I can't understand why this guy is going outside of the top 200 picks in NFBC leagues. I just took him. Chuck and I are in a slow draft, a 50-round draft and hold on NFBC right now. We snuck into the same league, and I took him. And I think I reached maybe, you know, a couple rounds. But to me, it's like, you know, we were just talking about Addison Russell, who had 21 home runs and 5 stolen bases with 238 average. Same average as last year. But Semien hits 27 home runs, steals 10 bases, you know, has more runs in RBIs, has more runs, not more RBIs. Maybe this is an Oakland effect. I mean, people just hate the team, so they're willing to downgrade him. But I think this guy is a top 12 shortstop at least, you know, maybe even the conversation for a top 10. and he's currently going, like I said, outside the top 200, but is the 15th shortstop off the board. He's going almost 20 picks behind Dansby Swanson. I mean, that is insane to me. Marcus Semien is a guy that should be on like everybody's roster because he is just offering too good a value. Yes, the average sucks, and I do think there are reasons to believe he can hit 245, 250, and that's not great, but it's up a little bit. But at that point in the draft, after pick 200, you're getting guys with warts. I mean, how many guys with warts have that much upside, especially at shortstop? I just think it's insane, his value right now. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Marcus Semien?
Well, I think the reason for your optimism about his batting average should be the fact that he had a ridiculously low BABIP last year. Mm-hmm. You know, his BABIP was 268. His BABIP had never been below 310 before in the major league level. So, you know, you would think. And his walk rate actually improved while his strikeout rate stayed about the same. So there is a lot in the profile to like. I think the effect that you're seeing is a combination that people – you know, Nando's right in saying that the offense is going to be better because on paper it really couldn't be much worse than it was last year. I mean, Yonder Alonso as a first baseman was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen, actually. He made, like, James Loney look like Babe Ruth compared to Yonder Alonso. That's how bad Yonder Alonso was last year. And so, you know, when you look at the stats, this draft position doesn't make any sense. But the two things that are happening is that people are not excited about the A's. 75 RBIs and 72 runs scored is not great by any means. And for some reason, people have this idea in their head that Franklin Barreto is going to get called up. And somehow if Semien was batting, you know, happened to be in a slump and was batting in the 220s or whatever when Barreto came up, people have it in their skulls that he might not get regular playing time the whole year, which I think is pretty silly when you considered, you know, when you consider how little depth that offense has around him.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the concern, I understand where people are coming from, but at the same time, look at their second base situation. They've got Pinder, Wendell, and Jed Lowry. I mean, you know, Barreto comes up. He probably does move Semien over to second base, but that's fine with me for this year. You know, maybe it's a little worrisome in terms of a dynasty or a keeper format, but honestly, I think Barreto comes up and plays second base, and that's a guy I would be interested in kind of stashing, but I don't think it's going to affect Marcus Semien for this year. Darius, what are your thoughts on Semien?
Yeah, I love the value too. I think certainly early on when he was with the A's, he was really struggling defensively, and obviously they had Ron Washington in to work with him, and I think once he kind of got over those issues, he was able to focus more on his hitting and did come along there. The average, I'm not sure how much is going to come up. I know the BABIP was low, but he's also a guy who doesn't go the other way very often, and I think he got quite a few hits taken away on shifts last year. But to be honest, at that price, I don't really care if he hits 240, if he's going to hit 25 homers and still double-digit bases anyway. The runs in RBI probably won't be outstanding unless the A's come out and surprise us all again. But I think at the cost, like you're all saying, then there's no reason not to take him there, really.
Yeah, I mean, I got him outside the top 200 in an NFBC draft that's going on right now, pick 202. So, I mean, it's not like his draft stock is going up, really, at any point this offseason. So I think he's definitely a guy that people should target if you miss out on the elite tier or guys that you really like kind of above him at the position. So. Coming soon from the minds that gave you the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Fantasy Sports Podcasts is a new venture, Survivor, Friends with Fantasy Benefits style. Let's go ahead and move over to a guy who had a little bit of a resurgence last year. Asdrubal Cabrera kind of had some pretty nice numbers with the Mets. He hit 23 home runs, 280 average. Darius, what are your thoughts on Asdrubal Cabrera this year?
Yeah, I kind of think the power is relatively sustainable. He made a lot of hard contact last year, more than at any point in his career, and his plate discipline has always been relatively consistent. So I think this is sustainable, maybe not to 23, but I think he can get to 20 again. I have a a couple of concerns about the Mets lineup. I think they have the potential to be pretty bad, and there's obviously a lot of injury concerns, especially with the likes of David Wright and Lucas Duda. And if you take those guys away, then potentially this is looking like a pretty poor lineup. I know they're not projected very well. But in terms of Cabrera himself, I think he's actually a pretty good value option who can get to that 20 homer mark, and he's pretty predictable in terms of what you're going to get out of him.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Cabrera? Are you buying in on him as a cheap option?
I guess overall I am not. You know, if you're in a deep enough league where you need depth around the middle infield, I can see it. I just don't like the fact that his stolen bases seem to have relatively disappeared in recent years, you know, with only having 11 total the last 2 years. He's also had a roller coaster career. At one point, he hit 25 home runs in 2011, and he had been in the league since 2007, but he had only had 18 home runs before that. You know, and then, you know, 16, 14, 15, you know, then last year, 23. You know, it's possible that he sustains, you know, he sustains the power from last year, but it's also possible that he hits 8 or 9 home runs if all these middle infielders sort of come back to the pack in power. And again, as very well pointed out, you know, 62 RBIs last year and 65 runs scored, because the offense around him has a tendency to be pretty abysmal. You know, it's basically Cespedes and the rotations is basically what they're running around for offense in New York. So it's hard to get overly excited, and yet at the same time, if you're really in trouble and you need middle infield depth, you can pray for a repeat, but I put the repeat odds at 30% or less.
Nando, what are your thoughts on Cabrera? Is he a guy you would take late?
Yeah, well, late, yes. But I guess if you're putting him up like if you're putting Cabrera's 23 home runs against Eduardo Nunez's 16, I guess I'm leaning Cabrera there, which for whatever that's worth. He's just not exciting. He's another Elvis Andrews to me, except power instead of speed. I do like him, though. He's okay. If I'm kind of forced to go a buck on him, I'll go a buck on him just because I think, like, you know what you're going to get. He's consistent and he plays. I don't get excited about him. He's not going to hit 30 next year. He'll probably just drop down to like 17.
Yeah, I think you have kind of it spot on. I think he's a guy that I think will probably regress in the power department. I think he'll also regress in the average department. Hit 280 last year. It was his highest average, I think, at the major league level. But at least for quite a while. So, and it came with a much higher BABIP than we're used to seeing from him. He is a career 307 BABIP. It was up to 310. So I guess it's not that big, but I expect him to drop down to kind of the levels we've seen him over the course of the last few years, where he's been, you know, kind of between a 245 and a 265 hitter. I would not expect to see him hit 280 again. And I think you're right. It comes down to maybe 15 to 18 home runs, which I think, you know, when you're getting outside the top 250 picks, it is, you know, it plays. But, I mean, I think there are other guys, you know, outside, you know, of the top 250 that are pretty interesting, or Orlando Arcia. You know, Jose Reyes has got a full season ahead of him. So, I mean, is it really a guy that is going to change your draft to that point? I think late, unless you really need some, you know, stability, maybe he's your backup to Troy Tulowitzki or something like that. That makes sense. But, you know, that late, usually I'm looking for upside. I'm not looking for kind of a compiler, and that's what Cabrera is. All right, let's move over to another guy who does have some interesting upside if he can get the playing time. Nando, what are your thoughts on Ketel Marte for this year?
I think he's going to get the playing time. I just finished writing a shortstop preview, and I had a whole paragraph on him, and I deleted it and rewrote it. I don't know why this happened, but I just thought he was I thought he was way better in the power category than he actually is. For whatever reason in my brain, I'm like, Ketel Marte is going to hit 10 home runs, no problem. And I went back and looked at everything. I'm like, no, he's not even close. And then I'm like, Ketel Marte is going to steal 40 bases. And I went back, and I'm like, you know, I kind of hedged that down to 30. I think I feel safer with that. He's going to have a batting average. I mean, you got a guy who could probably hit 290, maybe in that park. But I'm not worried about the playing time. I'm more worried about my wrong preconceived notions of him that I have to dial back now. And scrub the internet of any good comments I really made about Ketel Marte. He's going to be good, but I don't think he's going to be that kind of game-changing good that, you know, he's definitely not in that Tim Anderson level. He's, even if you think he's going to get the full playing time, I don't think there's enough there to really, to go out there and make, like, Ketel Marte your guy. You can like him, but I can't see anyone, like, waving the Ketel Marte flag too much.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Marte?
I have a few more concerns over the playing time. I have a little suspicion that this might be one of those situations in which fantasy players are irate that the major league team doesn't care about their fantasy teams and are using guys like Nick Ahmed in the lineup because he's got good defense and absolutely no offense. So that's a little bit of concern for me. I do think Marte will get the most playing time there, but I think that maybe caps his plate appearances a little bit. The park change is obviously a huge plus for him. It's going from Seattle to Arizona is one of the bigger changes you can make in the majors. So I like that. And I do think he can steal 30 bases if he gets a full-time season. But I think there are a few too many question marks with the playing time and certainly his adjustments to the major league, which he kind of struggled with last year, for me to really take a flyer on him anyway.
Chuck, are you a Marte fan?
I'm not. For whatever reason, I always try to take this sort of historical perspective on situations, and no team has chewed up middle infielders except for Robinson Cano, like the Seattle Mariners have. I mean, you know, remember when Ryan Franklin was a thing? Well, that's mm-hmm. not a thing anymore. Remember when Dustin Ackley was a thing? Well, that's not a thing anymore.
Brad Miller had to move to Tampa Bay to break out.
I mean, it just, every one of their middle infield prospects for some reason gets really hyped like they're going to be good, and then they just turn out not to be good and they move on, and maybe they have a splash here, a splash there briefly, but it doesn't seem like any of them turn out to be good either. And it amazed me last year that the Diamondbacks were willing to play Nick Ahmed as much as they did. I was absolutely stunned. And for some reason, every once in a while, a team has it in their head that they're just going to play a guy like way back when Jeff Mathis had to get playing time over Mike Napoli. And this just seems like the kind of situation that I'm not going to gamble on somebody in that offense, which really doesn't have that much depth, especially if Pollock doesn't come back. And that organization, which seems like it's kind of in turmoil, to say the least, you know, switching GMs and everything every year. So I sort of understand the pessimism about Marte, and I would be stunned if he ends up on my team. There's so many late options for speed that I don't think I need to go with somebody who looks like they take a wiffle ball bat with them to the plate as far as power is concerned. That's an awfully hard road to take to success in fantasy right now, having bench players with you know, five home run upside.
Yeah, I was big on him when he right before he broke into the majors in 2015, and I backed off last year, you know, prior to draft season, because the price kind of got a little bit out of control. But it wasn't like I was like telling people to run away. I just didn't like the draft value. And last year was extremely disappointing. I think he is a guy that could steal 40 bases at the major league level. I think he has that kind of speed. There's a lot of issues, though. One, I mean, if you look over roster resource, they don't even project him to be on the 25-man roster to start the season. You know, they're a team that has a lot of moving parts in the infield, and he could get left out if he struggles in spring training. I think he's one of those guys that needs a really, really big spring training or an injury to even make it onto the team, much less kind of the starting lineup. So it's definitely someone to monitor throughout kind of the spring training season and during the games, because if he doesn't hit, he's not going to be there. They've got Drury slated for second base. They've got Owings slated for shortstop. They still have Nick Ahmed, who's a good defender and play kind of all around the diamond. I think he is a guy with a really high upside, but I think he's also a guy with really low floor. And I don't know if we really know if Arizona's going to steal like they have in the past. They've been a team in the past that like to push it on the base paths, but new manager, kind of new management within that organization could change what their kind of team philosophy is. And he may not fit into that picture which would be a little weird considering they traded for him. But, I mean, currently, like I said, not slated to start on the 25-man roster, if you believe a roster resource is putting out there.
All right, hey, let me ask you guys, sorry, I don't want to take this off the rails too much.
No, please do.
I don't know if this is a thing like in our office or what, but do you guys find the roster resource loads kind of slow? Like you get the top of the page and then you got to wait like 30 seconds for the rest of it to come down?
It's not just you. And I love roster resource because it just is, it's like loaded with like the perfect amount of information and exactly what you're looking for. But no matter where I'm at, it loads just really, really slowly.
Oh, I just want to make sure. So while we're on the subject.
And in other computer news, did you see that they reformatted baseball reference pages today?
I thought I was on the mobile page by accident.
I mean, I thought it was perfect before. I think they wanted to change the printing or the look or something, or add more advertising because there's like Vera Wang and stuff flying all over the place now. But I'm in an adjustment period that I don't like right now.
I don't use baseball reference because, you know, I write for FanGraphs and I'm a company man. So, I'm only allowed to by contract to look at FanGraphs' page, not baseball reference. Just that was my little shout out to keep my job over there. None of it was true. let's move on to Zach Cozart. Nando, what are your thoughts on Cozart for this season?
You know, I kind of liked him back when I was at CBS, we had an issue with him versus Brian Dozier, and I kind of saw them both kind of similarly. I thought maybe Dozier would have some more steals. They'd probably hit about the same for power, and Dozier slightly better batting average. And then Cozart broke out, and then Cozart got hurt, and now I'm just kind of jumbled on what kind of player Cozart actually is. Probably not going to do anything with him just because of that uncertainty. I know it sounds weird, but I'd probably go with like a Jose Iglesias instead and just take that batting average and offset someone else. I think that's about as low as I would go there. But I think he's about right. Like I was looking at him in the NFBC ADP. It's kind of where I would put him. I would definitely take Simmons ahead of him. I would definitely take Freddie Galvis ahead of him and just kind of hope that Galvis's breakout was real. But I don't know. It just, to me, I just don't know what kind of player Cozart's going to be. And if I got stuck with him as my shortstop, I would definitely feel like I've been stuck with him as my shortstop and kind of hope for the best.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Cozart?
I think he's in the ideal park, course fielder side. I think while he's there, he can still provide at least enough power to be playable in the very latest rounds of fantasy, but I worry that the Reds are going to trade him. They've already been talking about trading him. I think they came close to doing so last year, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to be looking to do so as the season goes on this year. And so I think there's a risk that he moves to a much less favourable situation than Great American Ballpark. And I'm also a little concerned that he missed the last 3 weeks of last season with knee soreness after he lost most of 2015 to a torn ACL and LCL. So I think there are a few red flags there, and I think Nando's spot on that you kind of are going to feel a bit like you've got stuck with someone rather than him being a player that you're looking to go after in drafts.
Yeah, I think what you just brought up is my biggest issue. I mean, even with moving Brandon Phillips, they still have a number of guys they want to play at shortstop and second base. They have Dilson Herrera in the minors. Peraza's finally going to get his shot. So I think they would love to move a guy like Zach Cozart, continue their destruction of that team so that they can that way they can rebuild. And I hate the idea of him moving out of Cincinnati in that bandbox of a stadium. So to me, I've liked Cozart in the past, and I was on him last year as a super deep sleeper. I still think he kind of qualifies for that because he's going outside the top 250 once again. So I mean, he's definitely a guy that I could kind of go for in a NL only, but other than that, I'm probably going to stay away. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Cozart?
Well, you know, like I've been hinting at the whole way. I mean, trying to buy shortstops used to be going to the dollar store, and now trying to buy shortstops is going to Macy's or some fine department store. And you're talking about a guy with a .246 career batting average and a guy who has never stolen more than 7 bases at the major league level, and he's had 2 years of knee problems coming off of it. I actually like him as a super deep kind of sleeper. You know, in the NFBC, I may very well end up with him in our NFBC league, just because he's had these mini breakouts where, you know, he's had these stretches where he looks like he was really coming into his own. That was especially apparent in 2015, right before the knee injury, unfortunately. And I think that even if he moves, he's the kind of player that if he moves, he'll probably be playing well at the time and probably move to a situation where at least there'll be more offensive depth around him, because Cincinnati is a great place to hit, but it's not a great lineup to hit in. And so I'm not as worried about him. I'm higher on him than the rest of this panel, which doesn't need to be overstated, because I obviously realize that you got to be in a very deep roster kind of league to do more than keep track of him on the waiver wire.
All right, let's finish out this shortstop conversation with Andrelton Simmons. Nando, any interest in Simmons this year?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's had a weird career in the majors so far, but I think his minor league numbers at least are going to give you a decent batting average. I think that .280 last year was for real. Again, not going to see a lot of power, probably not a lot of steals, although he had a 25-plus season in the minors too. I don't know. I don't want to be naive and look at minor league numbers all the time, but I tend to just kind of – if the guy's been kind of up and down throughout his career, those 240 seasons that he had didn't quite match up. I think he's got good average. I think you're going to see some speed. Again, Ketel Marte style, probably not a lot of home runs. You're not going to see a repeat of that one breakout year, but he's good enough where I'd rather settle for him than a lot of players down in that kind of same area. Especially, Simmons over Cozart for me, Simmons over Espinoza. Simmons over Alcides Escobar. It'd be tight with his Drupal Cabrera, I guess, at that point in the draft or auction. It depends on what my team needs. But I'm very pro Andrelton Simmons. I think he's got some skill that he hasn't shown yet at the major league level.
I mean, I've been really pro Andrelton Simmons in the past, and I got burnt because I looked at those 17 home runs he hit in 2013. I looked at some of his minor league numbers. And I went for a couple years in a row as like a bold prediction that he was going to go 15-15, and it just never came to be. I like the fact that he broke double digit speed stolen bases last year. I just don't know how much I buy it. He's a great defensive player. You love watching him on the field, but in terms of fantasy, I just can't anymore. So I'm out on Andrelton Simmons. Darius, what are your thoughts on Simmons?
Yeah, I think I'm out too. I just don't see where the upside is coming from anywhere. He doesn't strike out much, so I would like to think that he would hit closer to 300 than he does, but he never has really. While I agree with Ando that I don't think he's a 240 hitter either, I don't think a sort of 275 hitter with kind of maybe 5 homer power and 10 steals is really going to help an awful lot of people. The one situation, and this is something that you're often talking about, is if you're in an AL-only league and you just want somebody who you know is going to play, and he will play because he's probably the best defensive player in the league, then maybe that's of some use, and you can probably speak to that better than I can. But outside of that, I can't see myself picking him up in any other kind of league, really.
I mean, in terms of an only league, I mean, the nice thing about him is, I mean, outside of last year, he put together 3 straight seasons of 500-plus, almost 600 plate appearances, and he'll compile for you. But, I mean, even last season, I mean, with almost 500 plate appearances, he didn't break 50 runs, 50 RBIs. It's not necessarily the compiling you even want to see for the most part. So, for me, I think he is reserved for AL only, but I don't even know how interesting he is outside of the fact you might be able to get him for a couple bucks. All right, that's going to wrap us up. Nando, thank you for joining us.
Oh, good times, man. Thanks for having me.
We love having you. We'd definitely try to have you on again, maybe in season. Again, give yourself some shout-outs, some plugs, and tell people where they can reach you on social media.
You could Nando DeFino on Twitter. That's about it. Fantasy Sports Network, just Google it. You'll find it somewhere. Listen to the radio. Listen to Fantasy Best Friends Forever. Good show. The youngsters are running that show now, Frank and Mike. So
nice.
I enjoy
nice.
It. Yeah, right? And, you know, go check out Barf. Good luck this weekend, man. I wish I could be there.
Yeah. We're having the annual Barf draft. It's the second annual. Some great names in the industry. We're going to have to get you out one year for that. At the Rec Room, if you're in San Francisco and you want to just kind of come and say hi, all the guys there are amazing guys, fun people to hang out with. Gonna be a bunch of guys drinking some beer and drafting on an old school fantasy board. So if you want to see some industry guys like Ray Flowers and Howard Bender and Laura Michaels, Sammy Reed, Doug Thorburn, myself, a number of other guys kind of drafting old school, not necessarily using the computer. So definitely come out and check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll try to do a Facebook Live for that. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my stuff on Fangraphs or friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Definitely give us a 5-star review. It helps us out quite a bit. Darius, what are you working on and where can you be reached?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. Got loads of things going on at the moment. I'm thinking about doing a sort of alternative look at projections next week. I won't give too much away, but it's going to be kind of a different way to maybe think about how we value players for the site. So look out for that. I'm still doing things for BP Wrigleyville. I got a piece up about John Lackey this week sort of past performances at age 38 and how we might project him going forward. And then loads of things going on over at Banished to the Pen as well. We've got all our season previews going on. Loads of great stuff from different writers. We've basically got a different writer or two every day. So we've got a lot of different perspectives going on there. That's really fun. And I want to give a shout out to Ken Maeder as well, who's our sort of resident artist, as well as running most of the stuff behind the scenes. He did a Simpsons 25th anniversary of Homer at the Bat with a new roster that he actually drew all the characters for as well. In the style of The Simpsons. So that was really cool. Go and check out all of that stuff.
I saw that. That was pretty awesome, actually. Definitely go check that out. Chuck, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I'm going to, I'm finishing up right now a piece on baseline traditional fantasy strategies for drafting. Some alternative views on how to look at how to draft a team. So I think that will be very helpful at the base level for a number of our listeners. I also want to thank Justin for skipping me on Andrelton Simmons because I was about to have the most annoying anti-war rant. It might have been like a legendary Chuck rant that I would have been mimicked for the entire rest of the season. So I actually appreciate not being able to speak out the venom that was about to come off my tongue for how ridiculous people overvalue defense within the war statistic.
But I'm bummed now. Would you like to spend the last 5 minutes of the podcast talking about Billy Beane?
No, I can't believe you would be bummed out because Billy Beane, I'm ready for his family to write me and ask me what he's done to me that I spit so much venom his way over time. I just have no idea how he keeps his job. But regardless of all that, I'm just trying to chip in the best I can for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And I want to remind all the listeners out there, I thought that the hoodies and the t-shirts and the stuff that we have for sale for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. That stuff is really cool looking. And I ordered some. And if you want to order some of the merchandise for the site, make sure and get in touch with us via Twitter and we will get you a link so you can do so.
Yeah, you can just go to teespring.com, type in FWFB and order your Friends with Fantasy Benefits merchandise only on sale through this week, though I'm sure we'll do another campaign at some point. All right. That will wrap us up. Fernando, Darius, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.